Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hello, I'm Peter King, and welcome to the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, where I take you inside the minds of the biggest influencers in the NFL.
This week, a special Super Bowl 52 podcast. Right after Philadelphia beat New England in Super Bowl 52, 41-33, in one of the greatest Super Bowls of the 34 that I have covered. It was a tremendous football game. And I don't care who you wanted to win, who you liked, this is a great example of no matter how much the ratings go down, the popularity of football is never going to die, at least in our generation, when they play Super Bowls like this. So, we are going to have several guests on the podcast this morning. We're going to have offensive coordinator Frank Reich of the world champion Philadelphia Eagles. We're going to have the man who threw the most famous tight end option pass in NFL history, Trey Burton, who threw a touchdown pass to Nick Foles at the end of the first half. Sage Rosenfels will stop by, the former NFL backup quarterback, marveling at what he saw on the field and the gut shown by Philadelphia head coach Doug Peterson. We'll also take you into the locker room of the Super Bowl champions, have quick conversations with Jeffrey Lurie, the owner of the Philadelphia Eagles, and sort of a touching goodbye conversation with Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator of the New England Patriots, who is destined to coach the Indianapolis Colts in 2018. Also, from Super Bowl week, we're going to have a Hall of Fame discussion. I'll be joined by Jared Bell of USA Today. And I'll also be joined by Mike Sando of ESPN.com, two of my peers on the Hall of Fame voting committee. And we'll also discuss with Bill Polian, the longtime competition committee member, whether the NFL can do anything about this what-is-a-catch rule. But first, you know, I'm just going to say two things about this game. I love this game. It was fantastic. As I record this just before 4 a.m. Eastern on Monday morning, still at U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, I just want to remind people of one thing. You know, no matter what team you root for, this was a great athletic event, a great football game, and a fun football game, a truly, truly fun football game. One of the reasons I really like this game is that it was two teams slugging it out. There was not a lot of chippiness. There was not a lot of people, taking cheap shots. And although Brandon Cooks of the Patriots did go down with an apparent concussion and a questionable hit by Malcolm Jenkins of the Philadelphia Eagles, you know, the way I look at it is that's football. And I just think that one of the things that we saw in this game was one of the reasons why we love football so much. And it's one of those things that no matter whether the ratings go down, no matter what you end up really, really thinking about this sport long term, I just cannot see it going away because of games like this one. I really hope you enjoy the podcast. I hope you enjoy. It's just kind of a rollicking, going into the locker room, trying to find as many guys as I can and discussing what exactly happened in the game. But you know, I do want to say just one other thing before we head into our conversations. Tom Brady, the first quarterback in NFL history to throw for 500 yards after the age of 40. He threw for 505 yards. Just really an incredible, to me, just an incredible way to cap a football season. And I think happily for all of us, Brady said to Jim Gray on Westwood One before the game that he will be back for the 2018 season for sure. There's been a bunch of conjecture about that. It really looks like Belichick and Brady will be back to try to win one more, even without their two coordinators, in 2018. So let's get on to the interviews. Let's get on to the show. And I hope you enjoy the podcast. Now my conversation with the offensive coordinator of the Philadelphia Eagles, Frank Reich. With Frank Reich, the offensive coordinator of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
That sounds so good. That's really good.
Frank, I got to know the origin of Philly Special. The origin of the first pass ever thrown to Nick Foles in his career.
Well, I'll tell you what, we were getting ready for the Vikings game and, you know, just watching a lot of film. And I can't remember exactly the first time we saw it. A lot of times, you know, one of our offensive assistants, you know, Press Taylor, he has this, what we call this vault of plays, of trick plays. And you know, it's just, it's an immense vault. And so every week we always go into Press's vault looking for plays. And we ask Press, hey, so I can't remember if it played out like that, but it was, we're going to play the Vikings, and we see the Bears run that play against the Vikings. And I remember sitting in Doug's office and we're saying, can we run this play against the Vikings? They had this play run on them a year ago. Will they smell it out? Now they won't smell it out. The plan was to run.
Who was the quarterback in the game that day? Do you remember?
Was it Cutler? I don't remember who it was. I don't remember who it was. Yeah. But we're sitting there and we're saying, yeah, we can do it. We can run it. We can run it. And it just, the situation never came up, and then the game got out of control, and we're like, oh, we'll save it. You know, we'll save it to the Super Bowl.
What happened when you guys installed that play? What did your players say?
Oh, they love that. I mean, they love it. And because it's Doug. I mean, that's what Doug does. I mean, he has a lot of confidence in the players. He trusts them. But let me just tell you, we rehearsed that play so many times, and you know, because we rehearsed it a bunch of times for the Vikings game, and then we come into the Super Bowl, and you come in here, and you're doing your walkthrough and stuff, and there's a lot of media around, so we didn't want to run it in front of a lot of people, so we're doing it in the hotel room. We're doing it in this little ballroom, like three times, just making sure that we're
in the Radisson Hotel at the Super Bowl. You practice this play in a ballroom in the Radisson Hotel.
No doubt, because there was an element of acting to it that we just had it. You wanted to perfect and the timing of it, and just get the flow of it, the shift. And really, that was the whole key, to get in a ballroom and make it like you're in the Super Bowl. And our players buy into that, and they did it.
What about the play calling of your head coach today?
I mean, the guy is a stud. I mean, I can't even put into words what a great play caller he is. He has a big set of, yeah, he's gutsy. He's
stone, shall we say?
A big set of stones. when he called that Philly special at that time, all the coaches were just looking.
It's fourth down.
It's fourth down. He doesn't even blink. He doesn't hesitate. That's Doug epitomized.
Yeah. You know, I just saw Jason Kelce crying because he said, "My parents always told me to go for my dream, and even when I shouldn't have been a player in college football, I was barely a player in high school football." Now he's in the Pro Bowl, and now he's a Super Bowl champion, crying, yeah. Weeping.
And I'll tell you what, and he's a champion in every sense of the word. That guy is one of the—we got a lot of strong leaders, but he's at the top. That guy's at the top, not only in the way he plays, but the way he conducts himself, the way he practices. The guy's phenomenal.
Last question. What was it about this game plan today that you formulated in the last 2 weeks and worked on with Doug Peterson? What is it about it, when you look back on it, that you're really going to be proud of?
Just the way our guys executed and bought in. And, you know, you're going up against a team, a defense that had been playing lights out for the whole last part of the season. And you know it's a challenge. And you know you're going up against, you know, all week long, you know, you're hearing, the genius coaches that they are. And they are. I mean, they've proven that. They have the track record to do that. We just really believe in our players, you know. And collectively as a staff, you know, we work at putting together a plan, and then Doug and I sit down and kind of and just sitting through it and going through it over and over again, just feeling like we got the right players. I mean, in one sense, you want the best plan possible, but what makes it a great plan is the way our players played.
Frank, three backup quarterbacks, Doug Peterson, Frank Reich, and Nick Foles. just beat Bill Belichick and Tom Brady in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that sounds pretty sweet. And, you know, especially against those two because, right, I mean, those guys are legends. They're literally living legends. And, you know, if you want to be champions, there can't be any better way of doing it than beating, you know, Coach Belichick and Tom Brady. And doing it the way we did it, you know, from an offensive coach's standpoint, to have to come back in the fourth quarter, to be leading that whole game, then to lose the lead, and then to have to come back and score one more time. That's about as sweet as it gets.
You know how happy the city of Buffalo must be for you right now after being with those great Bills teams that never won it and now you won it?
I can't even tell you the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of text messages and emails that I've gotten in the last couple weeks from people saying, this is it, you're going to get it this time. I appreciate that so much, you know, because at the end of the day, it's all about the relationships and the people you do this with. So, I appreciate them very much.
Frank, you're a good man. I think a lot of people in the NFL are really happy for you.
Thanks, Peter.
This is the MMQB Podcast.
In need of great talent for your business but short on time? You don't have to get lost in a huge stack of resumes to find your perfect hire. You just need the right tools. Smarter tools. Here's how ZipRecruiter is different. ZipRecruiter posts your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. Then, ZipRecruiter actively looks for the most qualified candidates and invites them to apply. They even review every application to identify the top candidates, so you never miss a great match. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That is correct, friends, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/MMQB. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MMQB. One more time on this special Super Bowl podcast, you try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/MMQB.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Now my conversation with Trey Burton of the Philadelphia Eagles. With Trey Burton, who's thrown the most famous tight end pass in Super Bowl history now. So, Trey, I talked to Frank Reich about Philly special. And he said you guys actually, because you wanted to keep it secret, you practiced it in the Radisson Hotel in the Mall of America. Yeah. Instead of out on the practice field where somebody might actually see it.
I mean, yeah, with who we're playing and, you know, all the level of stuff that's happened with them. We didn't want to run it too much this week. But the last 2 weeks, Atlanta and Minnesota, we've ran it in practice a couple times. And it never worked better than it did today.
So when the play is called in the huddle, take me into the huddle and tell me exactly what the reaction was. What does Foles say? Philly special?
Yeah, he says, like, target left bunch, Philly special. And we break the huddle and... At first, like, I'm in the huddle, not really knowing what play is going to be called, and I just remember him saying, Philly special. I was like, oh, all right, let's do it. And that was the last time I thought about, like, you know, fourth and one or goal line.
It was fourth down. It was fourth down in the Super Bowl.
Doug's got some guts, doesn't he? Got some guts, man. I mean, it worked perfectly.
Was there any doubt in your mind when you got the ball in your hands what was going to happen?
I threw my hands up as soon as it left my hand. I knew. I mean, he was wide open, and I felt like I put it in a good spot. I mean, Foles is an unbelievable athlete. People don't understand that. He's an unbelievable basketball player. Duke can you know, has a ton of athleticism, and I knew if I just threw it up there, he would catch it.
Last thing. So what about this team? You know, more than a month ago, when Carson Wentz gets hurt, everybody on our side of the business totally gives up on you guys, and you guys didn't. What is it about your team that kept you believing?
The team, I mean, the only thing I can really compare it to is really the story of Gideon. There's a story of Gideon in Judges 7 in the Bible, where there's a bunch of people going to a battle, and God tells them it's too much. Too many guys, and if they go to battle with that many people, God wouldn't get the glory. And you should go read it. It's really similar to what happened to the guys in this team, and it shows the resiliency, shows how special the guys are behind the starters. You know, to be able, I mean, to Foles to be able to step in for the NFL MVP, you know, and take us to a Super Bowl, and this shows, you know, his character and the type of guy that he is.
You got a coach who was a backup quarterback, an offensive coordinator who was a backup quarterback, and a quarterback who was a backup quarterback. And you guys beat Tom Brady and Bill Belichick today.
It's pretty surreal, isn't it?
It's what football is, though. Brady, these things happen in football.
Brady's not bad himself, is he? He's an unbelievable.
He only threw for 505 yards in the Super Bowl, and you won the game.
I mean, and how old is he?
He's 40.
Dude, he's unbelievable. But, man, I mean, all the injuries.
Doesn't that make it better, though, really? You know, to beat Brady?
I mean, honestly, bro, being a Philadelphia Eagle and winning a Super Bowl, it doesn't get any better than that. The city deserves this. Organization deserves this. Man, there's so many. This has been such a long time coming, you know, and we finally got one. We're champs.
Trey Burton, congratulations. This is a night you'll remember the rest of your life, as will the football world.
I'll never forget it, man. Unbelievable.
You're listening to the MMQB Podcast.
And now a quick question and answer with Sage Rosenfeld, the retired NFL quarterback. One question for Sage Rosenfeld's in the bowels of U.S. Bank Stadium. He's watching Frank Wright give a press conference afterwards, and he has waxed eloquent about how gutsy it was for Doug Peterson to call an option pass to the quarterback on fourth down. What did you think when you saw it, Sage Rosenfels?
Well, it was brilliant design, and you know, a quarterback in that situation, you usually hand the ball from under center and they can't throw it to you, but in that situation out of the shotgun, you are an eligible receiver. The gutsiness of that call is legendary. And what Frank said about that Doug said he was going to keep his foot on the gas the entire game. Doug Peterson seems to be a coach that plays from his gut, plays from instinct. I think players like that because he doesn't always play the numbers, doesn't always play the statistics. You believe in your players when you play from your gut and your instinct.
Thanks, Sage.
All right, thank you.
It's the MMQB Podcast.
And here's what I saw in the locker room after the Eagles' momentous victory. We're in the Eagles' locker room. They've just finished dancing to a rap song, and now Doug Peterson is up. And they're chanting, Doug, Coach of the Year, Coach of the Year.
This is the MMQB Podcast. QB Podcast.
Now my conversation with Philadelphia owner Jeffrey Lurie. With Jeffrey Lurie, the owner of the Philadelphia Eagles, who's bringing a Super Bowl championship back to Philadelphia. Jeffrey, what did you say to your team on Friday before the game?
Well, I can't tell you everything, but I will tell you, I told them I've never seen such an impressive group of men in any walk of life. the players and the coaches, the adversity, all the injuries to five Pro Bowl players, lose your MVP quarterback and your world champs, and we were, you know, Friday obviously playing for it. It's just an incredible group of men, and it's a lesson to us all. It's not always the hand you've been dealt. It's not always the on paper how you are. Again, you know, it's what you can become as a group, and that's life.
When you hired Doug Peterson as head coach, USA Today rated him the seventh head coaching hire that year and ridiculed Doug Peterson. They weren't the only ones. What did you know that everyone didn't?
You know, I've known Doug for over 20 years as a player, as an assistant coach, as a quarterback coach. I was, you know, very intimate with what was going on in Kansas City with terms of Andy. I've known the man. I know what kind of leader he is. It has nothing to do with on paper. It's you either have it or you don't.
He's not afraid. You know, and the one thing, I just talked to Frank Reich and I said, you know, three backup quarterbacks beat Bill Belichick and Tom Brady today. You know, Doug Peterson, Frank Reich, and Nick Foles. That's right. That's football.
Wow, that is football. He's a fearless play caller. I'm not surprised Trey threw it to Nick and he caught it. He can catch it one-handed. He's an incredible basketball player. And as soon as the ball is in the air, I said, he's not going to drop it.
Jeffrey, thank you and congratulations.
Pete, thank you.
You're listening to the MMQB Podcast.
Support for the MMQB Podcast with Peter King comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. In addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply. Understand fully. Mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/king. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And now a few words with Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator of the New England Patriots. So what will be your takeaway memory of working with Tom Brady for the prime years of his life?
It's the honor of a lifetime in coaching. You don't get to coach players like this many times. And he is. He's the best football player that has ever played, in my opinion, and obviously he's the most decorated. He's a tremendous competitor. He's made me such a better coach just having spent the amount of time I've spent with him. He's a great person, and you know, I just feel terrible that we weren't able to close the show tonight.
When this day fades, you will have one of the most incredible coaching experiences anyone ever has. It'll take a while. You think you'll realize that?
I mean, I think working for Bill, coaching Tom, being able to experience all the things, that's not lost on me, that's for sure. And working for Robert. I mean, those are three people that are going to go to Canton. And, you know, I'm very proud that I was able to, you know, play a small role in some of the memories we've had here and the successes we've had. And, you know, it's just, it's a tremendous place. They're tremendous people, and I'm very fortunate.
Just say one thing about the game. 73 offensive snaps. Nate Solder gave up zero sacks, zero quarterback hits, and one pressure, and he was on an island the entire game.
Yep.
Your strategy sort of worked in that way, didn't it?
Yeah, we we knew going into it we were going to try to help, you know, on Fletcher Cox and Graham. I mean, those guys deserve that. That recognition, they deserve it. They were tremendous players all year long, and we felt like that was the best way to go about our game plan. And like I said, I think the line played tremendous. I mean, Nate played great. Tooney was back there on an island a lot of times too. Mason and those guys had to block those guys some singles too, you know. So I thought the guys played their heart out. Just unfortunate that we weren't able to capitalize a couple of those early drives. You know, maybe we could get ahead a little bit earlier in the game, you know, and not have it come back to bite us at the end.
What a football game.
Unbelievable. I mean, they're a great team. They're great, very well coached. That's a tremendous, tremendous team. They don't – you talk about mental toughness. We come back, take the lead in the fourth quarter. They come back, take – you know, and they just kept playing. You know, they're well conditioned. They play hard. There's no cheap stuff. It was a clean football game. I thought the guys on both sides competed their butt off. They're really well coached, and, you know, they deserve all the credit in the world. They made a couple more plays than we did.
Josh, good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
It's the MMQB Podcast.
And now a quick Hall of Fame discussion with my friends Mike Sando of ESPN.com and Jarrett Bell from USA Today. Back on the MMQB Super Bowl Podcast with Peter King. We're going to do a little segment now on the Pro Football Hall of Fame voting that happened on Saturday at the Airport Marriott in Minneapolis. I'm joined by Mike Sando of ESPN.com and Jarrett Bell of USA Today, two fellow voters. And I thought, guys, that what we would do in our brief time together is talk about what, in your minds, surprised you the most, if anything, about the voting. I'll give you mine first, and then I'm going to go to you. I think what surprised me is that both Randy Moss and Terrell Owens got in the Hall of Fame. Not necessarily that it should be a surprise, but that they both got in after some rancorous, but I thought respectful discussion in the room. That would be my surprise takeaway. Mike, go ahead. You take yours.
Yeah, I would have been embarrassed if Randy Moss didn't make it. I would have been embarrassed. There's every once in a while someone comes up where I feel like if this guy doesn't get in, I feel like we're the problem. T.O., I was surprised that things came together so quickly because it was contentious last year, and I felt like it was uncertain whether he would get over the top this year. And even when he did get to the five, I was worried like that he wasn't going to get the 80% votes. And I thought, oh. But I felt great at the end with our class at the end. I felt like we haven't had many complaints this year. I think people feel like we got them right.
I agree. Jarrett Bell, give me your big takeaway as a surprise.
Yeah, kind of following up on that same theme, the fact that both of these receivers got in. I don't know if we saw that coming in. But I think, and you touched on it, the conversation was not as intense as it was last year on T.O. I mean, people spoke their minds, people gave their opinions, but it was also good to hear some of the voters express that they had changed their mind. And then when you look at the fact that we got two linebackers in, I mean, it's very rare that we get two players at one position in the same year. It happened last year with Terrell Davis and LaDainian Tomlinson, but it happened with the linebackers as well this year in addition to the receivers.
You know, one of the things that's underrated, and people are probably saying, what is that noise in the background? We're standing in the press box 2 hours before the Super Bowl begins, so there's a Darius Rucker concert somewhere, and it's just noisy in here with the EAGLES Eagles stuff. But here's the one thing that really interested me. I think it's a positive year when we can cut into the defense offense gap. You know, the fact that right now going into this meeting this year, there's 56% offensive players, 28% defensive players, and the rest are off-field people like coaches. And to me, putting in two linebackers, I really like that. Putting in Robert Brazil as a seniors committee guy, I liked all that, and I like the fact that there seems to be momentum for some other defensive guys like Ty Law. I mean, yesterday, one of my takeaways after this meeting, Ty Law is getting in the Hall of Fame. I don't know what year it's going to be, but Ty Law is getting in the Hall of Fame. But I don't know. Do you guys feel like coming in every year, is it on your mind at all, the defensive gap with the offense? Jarrett, you start.
Yeah, I don't know if I look at it offense, defense per se, but we're all aware of it because we talk about it, right? And the fact that, you know, John Lynch has been a finalist for multiple years, I think it's good that it's, you know, something that's brought up in the context of everything that we talk about. But typically when I go in every year, Peter, I still want the best five players. Yeah. I want the best five candidates. I mean, we had a guy this year, Everson Walls, who made it to the final 15, and we had never discussed him in the room, and I thought it was a tough year for him to be in there on his one and final shot before he goes into the big seniors pool. It was a rough year to kind of crack it, but you look at that, the fact that he made it to that point says something about the respect I think that some people are having for some of the defensive guys.
Yeah, you know, Peter, I pay attention to that, but I also was thinking yesterday when that was being brought up, oh, we need more safeties, we need all whatever. I Googled on my computer the franchise tag values, okay? The lowest ones are the kicker, right? And you go tight end, and you go safeties. And you go the other end, you go quarterbacks and defensive ends and pass rushers. So while I don't want those guys shut out, I don't think we need the 10 best kickers in, because we don't have enough kickers. Or the,
right.
You know, I think there's a value with some of these positions that help certain players. And that's why when we're like, oh, it's the dearth of guards over the years. Well, I think we're addressing that. We're going to get some of these guys in. That's sort of a next thing for next year. We've got a big backlog of offensive linemen. But positional value does come into this, and I think that helps some of the guys get in.
Mike, what do you think we're going to do about the offensive linemen? Five were up yesterday. Yeah. None of them made it to the final five to get the yes or no vote. What happens next year?
Well, next year I think we have 2 to 3 locks, okay? We have Ed Reed coming in, who's a lock, I believe. Tony Gonzalez, a complete lock. Be more embarrassed than if Randy Moss didn't get in almost.
Right.
And then Champ Bailey's coming in, and I think he could be close to a lock. I would say he has a stronger case than Urlacher, if you just look at his credentials.
Right. Yeah.
So there's three. And so my hope is, you know, looking at it, we already know who the 15 are going to be if you look at it. We're pretty close. I hope a couple offensive linemen go in. I love the fact that we emerged from yesterday with Moss and Owens both in. We don't have to keep hitting our head on the wall on this like we did at receivers a few years ago. Remember? It took so long, and people were like, oh, how does Chris Carter not make it in? And it's like I love it when we make progress that way, and I hope next year's offensive linemen, maybe we get two of them in.
Yeah. Jared, what do you think about the offensive line next year coming up?
Yeah, he just touched on it when he mentioned Chris Carter, and I think we had Chris Carter, Andre Reed, Tim Brown. We had that log jam at wide receiver, and then it went 1 year, then the next year, and the next year. I think we're probably looking at the same thing for the offensive linemen as well. Now, how do you separate them? I mean, to see Tony Boselli in that group along with Hutchison and Mawai and Alan Faneca, it's going to be tough to separate one from the other, but they're all strong candidates. So we'll get one of those guys in, I would think, next year. But, hey, you mentioned it a minute ago. Ty Law is going to get in one day as well. So there are no guarantees, but I think when you see the momentum that guys are coming up year after year, just like Boselli, he's been, I think, like 10 years or almost 10
right.
years on the ballot, and he's – advanced over the past couple of years into the top 10. So the respect is there for these guys. So I think if you were to look historically at guys who get to the top 10, it's like a high 90% chance that they'll ultimately get into the Hall of Fame.
I want to just end with this. So Jerry Kramer got in the Hall of Fame about 900 years after he finished playing. And Andy Benoit last night hung out with him. With Jerry Kramer, and just so excited, so happy. And I really struggled for years, I mean years, for Jerry Kramer. I voted for Jerry Kramer yesterday, in part because sometimes I think I'm being stubborn for stubborn's sake. I have a principle. What exactly is my principle? But I wonder right now, Were you guys absolutely convinced about Jerry Kramer, or because it took so long and the jury of his peers never elected him, do you have some thought in the back of your mind, God, did we do the right thing? Jared.
Not really. And the reason why is because I've talked to so many people connected to the league, people who played in that era, and they endorsed Jerry Kramer. You know, we have guys that fall through the cracks all the times. And the interesting thing with him versus, say, Robert Brazil. Robert Brazil played about 10 years later than Kramer did, right? So I saw him as a teenager play. I have some context about how good he was, even though I wasn't covering the league at that time, but I was a fan and I was emerging. But in Kramer's case, I didn't see him play. I was like 10 years old, right, or even younger than that, yep, when he was in his heyday. And so I had to rely on the wisdom of people who played against him. And, you know, the one thing that kind of comes into play where you say, well, how many Packers can we put in? How many Steelers can we put in? That kind of weighs on you a little bit. But the fact that our seniors committee, which really does the work on guys like that, came back for a second time on Jerry Kramer, I mean, that carried a lot of weight with me.
Yeah, and I really respect the process. And I feel like when our committees look at the guy for the whole year, they would have to, like, be really flubbing their toe or really messing it up for me to say no. So, for example, a year or two ago, when Jerry Jones came up, did I think there needed to be this rush to get Jerry Jones in right now? Would I have maybe rather have seen somebody else get that slot?
A Pat Bowlen type, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Did I vote for Jerry Jones? I did. You know, I'm not going to be like, because I respect the process. I mean, I think it's a good process. We have really informed people who research this. And, of course, I'll look at it, too, and research it. But that's set up pretty well, and I think they would have to be like, putting up Kramer from Seinfeld for me to say, you know, no way, we're not putting this guy in, you know.
I'd really like to hear some discussion on Cosmo Kramer. I really would. I think it would be fun.
I hope it doesn't come to that.
Yeah.
You got him started.
Jared Bell, Mike Sando, thank you so much for joining me and breaking down the Hall of Fame voting for the class of 2018.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me, man.
It's the MMQB podcast.
We all know the value of a good night's sleep. I'm out on the road all the time, so believe me, nothing makes me happier than being back home for a good night's sleep, thanks to Mattress Firm. They'll make your wallet happy, too. The base for my argument is simple. Your bed budget can go further when you're shopping at America's neighborhood mattress store. It's like having a touchdown and getting the game ball. Mattress Firm is the head coach when it comes to mattress expertise. But know this, they're more than just mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed. From adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor, they have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite corner. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening soon as you finish this show. They even offer you a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection, and a 120-night low-price guarantee, so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch, a knockout. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. And finally, my conversation with Bill Polian, the longtime NFL general manager, the Hall of Fame general manager, and what exactly a catch is today in the National Football League. Joined on the MMQB podcast with Peter King, the Super Bowl edition, by longtime NFL general manager Bill Polian, who now works for ESPN. And I wanted to have Bill on this week and this special Super Bowl edition of the podcast because something happened in Minneapolis that when I first saw it, I thought of Bill, and I'll tell you exactly what it is. The commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, said at his Super Bowl press conference that, in essence, they're going to do a thorough review of what is a catch and what isn't a catch. They're going to do a thorough review of the catch rule in this offseason. The NFL Competition Committee, along with a bunch of players and former players, and are going to examine this rule. The officiating department in the NFL will examine this rule. And finally, they're going to have a rule that is going to be common sense, so we won't always wonder what is a catch. And I'm going to tell you why I thought of Bill Polian, because he made this comment to me at one point in this never-ending discussion about what is a catch. And the point he made was, if you have 2 feet on the ground and you have possession on the ball and you don't have to actually, quote-unquote, finish the act of a catch or make a football move or whatever parlance the NFL uses, there's going to be an awful lot of physical play from people trying to dislodge the ball from a receiver. And in an era when the NFL is trying to limit the amount of physical contact, particularly in the head and neck area, this could be going backwards. So I thought it would be good to ask Bill at this moment what he thinks of this new rule or the thought about making a new rule and what, if anything, can be done. So welcome, Bill, and I'm just going to give you the floor and ask you your thoughts.
Okay, well, I was, by the way, served on the last committee that evaluated the rule, as well as serving on the competition committee for 20 years. So I'm very conversant with it. You were correct. The rule is as follows. In the field of play and in the end zone, in order to have a catch, you have to have 2 feet down or a body part down, 2 feet, one knee equals 2 feet, and possession of the ball. And here's where it gets a bit dicey. There is a period of time which is required before the catch is completed and before you become a runner. Now, that's subjective. It's subjective based on the official's view of things. So, and subjective, for it exists for two reasons. One, we don't want cheap fumbles. Let's assume that you have 2 feet down, quick possession, boom, player hits you, ball comes out. Right now it's called a bang-bang play, and it's automatically incomplete. If we change the rule and didn't have the time frame in there, then you would have a ton of fumbles, catch fumbles, which now become melees. That's dangerous. Secondly, and most importantly, the time period between the time you catch the ball, possess it, and have 2 feet down and become a runner is the time that you are protected under all of the defenseless player rules. So, in essence, catch no catch is married to defenseless player rule. That time period, which is admittedly subjective, between the time you possess the ball with 2 feet down and the time you become a runner is the time that you are protected as a defenseless player. So if we remove that time period, which some people suggest, you now have created open season on receivers. You can whack them in the head. You can do anything you want to them because they have no protection. So that's the number one hurdle that you face when you try to modify the rule. Now, in the field of play and in the end zone, and while the player is upright, there are no problems with the rule. Nobody argues with that. The problem is the player going to the ground. And when a player goes to the ground, the rule says that he must survive the ground. Well, okay. What does that mean? Well, it means different things to different people, and herein is where we have the problem. And the problem is exacerbated by something called the Emmanuel exception. And by the way, there are exceptions to every rule, and they're very confusing. I hope I'm not confusing you with this one. The Emmanuel exception is named after Bert Emmanuel, who in an NFC championship game many years ago had 2 hands under the ball, controlled it. The ball hit the ground in the process, and because it hit the ground, the officials correctly ruled that it was incomplete. Now we have a situation where we say if the player goes to the ground and he has complete control of the ball and the ball hits the ground and it doesn't aid the catch, then it's a catch. Well, therein lies the problem. You take super slow-mo replay and you say, did the ball move a millimeter? Well, if it moved a millimeter, then the catch was aided, et cetera, et cetera. So the problem really, when you define it, is with the Emmanuel exception in going to the ground. That's, by the way, a very small number of plays, probably less than 50 a year. But when they occur, they're very controversial, and super slow-mo replay, which distorts the time frame. Everything about time in the game is distorted by super slow-mo replay, is the problem. So I think there's two ways to look at it. One, do away with the Emmanuel exception. If the ball hits the ground under any circumstances, as the player is going to the ground, it is an incomplete pass. That's the one I'm for. If I had a vote, that's what I'd vote for, because it's easy to officiate. It's easy to officiate on replay. Boom, we look and see if the ball hit the ground. If it hit the ground, then no catch. Let's move on. By the way, replay reviews are way too long. The commissioner said that, and he's right. He's 100% right on that. We got to change that. The other way to look at it is to say that the Emmanuel exception stays in, and we give the benefit of the doubt to the guy catching the ball. So unless he lost it completely, it's a catch. To me, that's too subjective. That's why I come down on the other side of it. But it's really very simple. And the problem is limited only to players going to the ground. That's where the problem lies. No one has a problem with guys upright in the field or in the end zone. No problem at all.
Bill, let me ask you, let's go to the Jesse James question. Okay, the Jesse right. James question. The Steelers-Patriots, Jesse James catches the ball in the field of play. He stretches out to cross the plane of the goal line. He crosses the plane of the goal line in full possession of the ball, comes to the ground, and the ball is jarred and it moves slightly. Was the correct call made on that to say it was not a catch? And should that be changed to allow that to be a catch?
Well, let's go back and parse the rule. He caught the ball, went to the ground, lunged to the goal line, across the goal line. The ball was moving, and it actually moved quite a bit. And he actually lost possession and then regained it just as he hit the ground, in my view, when I looked at the play. So it was a classic going to the ground, didn't have possession, no catch. As much as you feel sorry for the Pittsburgh fans, and when you see it in real time, as I did, I was broadcasting that game on ESPN radio. When I looked at it in real time, I said touchdown. When I looked at it in slow-mo replay in the booth, I immediately on the broadcast said, no, this is going to get overturned. He did not have possession when he went to the ground. It's really quite simple. The problem is that people conflate the goal line with catch, no catch. You cannot, the goal line doesn't come into play because in order to break the plane of the goal line, you must have possession of the ball. That's what the runner does when he breaks the plane. In this case, Jesse James, unfortunately, didn't have possession of the ball, so the goal line doesn't come into play.
All right, Bill, we're going to end with this. If Roger Goodell calls you and says, Bill, I want to know what we can do now to clarify the catch rule, to make it easier so that everyone knows what a catch is. I mean, I've got my feeling. I think that's impossible. But I want to hear, what would you say to Roger Goodell if he asked you, where do we start and what do we do?
Very simple. Eliminate the Emmanuel exception. If the ball touches the ground at any time while a player is going to the ground, it's incomplete. Simple as that. People are going to say, oh, well, yeah, but he controlled the ball. You can't have it both ways. I'm a believer in the officiating philosophy that you try to eliminate as much gray area as possible. Remember, we're talking probably less than 50 plays a year. You try to eliminate as much gray area as possible, and by eliminating the Emmanuel exception, which by its very definition creates gray area, you've now made it easy to officiate and easier to understand. We can't do anything about the time frame of a guy catching the ball because, again, catch, no catch, and that time frame between the time he catches the ball and becomes a runner is when he's protected as a defenseless player. You don't want to even think about changing that.
Bill, last thing I would ask you on this whole topic. Do you believe there will be tangible change and significant change in this rule before the start of the 2018 season?
Well, I don't know. I think the committee will take a look at it based on the deliberations that I was in the last time we looked at it, which is what, I don't know, 3-4 years ago. You know, we decided that we'd try to clarify the language after you talk with the officials and you eliminate all of the kind of knee-jerk stuff that causes unintended consequences, like the protections for the defenseless players. When you get right down to it, there's not a lot you can do to clarify it. You can clarify the language. You can make it easy to officiate. And where I come out, as I say, is eliminating the Emmanuel exception, which means that when a guy goes to the ground, if the ball hits the ground, it's incomplete, period. End of story.
In other words, if he has possession of the ball and the ball does not move and the ball hits the ground, it should still be, if you eliminate the Emmanuel exception, that will mean that there's no catch.
That's correct. Yeah.
Bill Polian, I really appreciate you taking the time and lending your expertise to what is going to be, in my opinion, it sounds all well and good to say we're going to work on making the catch understandable for all. I just don't know that there ever is going to be a situation like that in the NFL.
It's really complicated, but I can already in my mind see a compromise. For example, if you said eliminate the Emmanuel exception with one small caveat, that if the ball didn't move at all, not 1 millimeter, when it hit the ground, then you could call it a catch. I could, in the era of super slow-mo, I could see that maybe working. But that's what the competition committee will talk about, and they'll look at all the film. But I agree with you. I don't think this is not the cause celeb that some have made it out to be, number one. And number two, it's pretty complicated because of the defenseless player rules. That's what makes it really hard.
Bill Polian, thanks a lot for joining me and giving me a good explanation on a complex issue.
Thank you.
Thanks to my guests, Frank Reich, Trey Burton, Sage Rosenfels, Jeffrey Lurie, Josh McDaniels, Mike Sando, Jarrett Bell, and Bill Polian. If you enjoyed these conversations, be sure to listen and subscribe to other great episodes in the MMQB series, such as my conversations with Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and Ben Roethlisberger. You can find these on the MMQB.com, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review while you're there. Thanks to the fine folks for burning the midnight oil with Cadence 13 and getting this podcast out. And thanks, of course, to my sponsors, ZipRecruiter, Quicken, and Mattress Firm. Please support them the way they support this podcast. And I'll see you next week.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.